This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Are you enjoying your iPad?
I am.
I thought it would be a toy, but it's actually quite useful.
Now, are you doing screenplay stuff, or what are you doing on it? Like,
I haven't been doing screenplay right now. I was just checking the air, which the fast-flowing weather. We have 23 miles an hour right now. Funnily enough, that's important when you're hanging balloon lights. So, no, I love it. Highly recommend.
Yeah, no, we were discussing it over at dinner tonight.
Yeah, I waited for the 3G, and I really thought it would be a toy, but I use it for everything. I can't write screenplays on it unless they come out with a Final Draft app, which they may. But I don't think you'd want to anyway, because the keyboard's funny.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of old school.
Outside of the wind, how are you enjoying Shreveport?
Shreveport has been perfect. We've been able to, when Patrick and I wrote the thing, we wrote it so that it would basically be a road movie that would travel across several states, and we've been able to find different looks for that here in the area. So it's worked out nice.
Can you talk about writing for 3D?
3D, we did it for Valentine. It's for me, at least, it's... Oh, sorry, that's yours. Here's mine. For me, it's always going to be the story first, for Patrick as well. And so we did that with this. We did it with Valentine. I know a lot of guys think that Valentine only plays in 2D. Maybe some of you guys, those of you who think that, are wrong. It's we really did write it for the story. But once you get into production, once you start doing, you know, this process, certain things will jump out at you. There'll be some things, some shots will be more 3D than others. There's two ways. I love the 3D. I don't think 3D's, I'm not one of those guys that's scared to death of it, think it's going to take over everything. I love the fact that you have the immersive 3D and the voyeuristic 3D, and then you have the in-your-face gimmicky 3D, and we're going to do both. And I think there's a place for both. And so we have that, where there's moments when it's just Nick Cage and Amber Heard, and where you're in the car with them, and it's not stuff flying at your face, but you're literally sitting in the back seat, or you're sitting there between them. And so it's sort of interesting. And then at the same time, we're going to throw cars and guns and bullets and broads and naked people at your face. Because it's fun. That's the roller coaster. So, yeah, we do write some for 3D.
Did you write anything in the script where it is your blood drips down the frame?
Yes.
So is there a lot of that kind of stuff?
No. There's one shot, and I mean, Patrick can elaborate on it. I think it was more or less an accident. But it's the kind of thing that when you have somebody like Max Penner, who's here and working the 3D, he saw it, pulled in on it, so suddenly, you know, the audience is watching blood drip through a cracked window all around them. So it can be kind of fun. But,
so since it's original screenplay, right?
Yes.
When does it take place? Like, is it modern day? Is it like some weird time? Like, what's the...
It's modern day. It is modern day. Some of the cars are older, but it is absolutely modern day. There are modern cars in it. There are modern people, modern clothes, modern talk. We wrote Valentine sort of to pay tribute to all the old slasher movies that we grew up with, and I think we did that. We did it in a way that it was a modern story, but it played to those 1980 slasher movies. We did the same thing with this. Patrick wanted to do a 1970s road movie, and as you'll see, this is a modern story, but it's got so much 1970s in your face feel to it. So that was the point. It was to take that we loved growing up and sort of do it for the better. I think we accomplished it. We'll see.
Are there certain movies you found yourself rewatching?
Yes, I want, but I want Patrick to talk about that, because he was the one who sold me on it. So I don't want to steal that thunder, because this is why we're such a good partnership, because I would have never done a 1970s road movie thing. It just wouldn't have occurred to me. So when he started. When he started talking about it, he brought up all these movies, and he'll do it with you guys, and you'll feel the goosebumps as you start realizing the story that he wanted to tell. And so I'll leave that for him. He was the one that inspired it. So
when did Nick come onto the project, and how did anything change after he came on?
Yes, we got the green light. Nick is more than just a fantastic actor. He will get your movie made. The first thing that we did is we went to producers, and the first And we met with a lot of great producers, and a lot of them had said, you know, this is what we would do. That, you know, we would do this. If you just did this right here, it would be perfect. And if you did this, when we met with DeLuca, he immediately started quoting dialogue and was just, he was the most excited guy in the room. 5 minutes into it, we knew he was the guy. And so while we were talking to him, we asked, you know, what would you do differently? What would you do? You know, what notes do you have? And he said, go shoot. And so, you know, when you're coming in as writers and some producer says, let's just go shoot what you wrote, that never happens. So so that was why we came on with DeLuca. And because of the whole Ghostwriter thing, Mike sent it over to Nick. Nick read it and loved it, and here we are.
How violent is it?
It's it's as violent as you can get and still get an R, I think. It's we start from the moment the movie opens, it's in your face, and all the stuff that you guys are going to see, it's violent.
Is that what sold him on it?
No.
There's kind of a shortage of really hard R.
There's a shortage of hard R. It was a story in the character. He's never played a character like this, and so that was the thing that really won him over. And the story itself, you know, on the surface, Patrick and I love actors, almost in a geeky kind of way. And we write for actors. And so even down to the smallest character in the film, they all have their moment. And you take that and you put into a story that has, you know, it's in your face, and there's tons of hardcore R action and nudity and you name it. But at the same time, there really is a story there. There's you know, it's got heart. And at the end of the movie, people will feel it. And so I hope they'll tell their friends and want to see more.
What'd you guys learn on My Bloody Valentine that you were able to maybe apply to this film?
We learned things I can't tell you, because the people who read this will know what we learned. But for the most part, we learned that our partnership works. It's a weird partnership. You'll meet Patrick. If you've met Patrick, we are not very much alike. But we bring such different tools to the table. He doesn't think like me. I don't think like him. He thinks like an editor. He thinks like a director. He thinks completely outside of the box when it comes to writing. And so because of that, he leads me down roads I would have never gone to. And he sucks at grammar. So together we are perfect. And I put in all the dirty words. It works really well. But the thing that we found with Drive Angry more than anything else is we wrote the movie we wanted to see. And I've done it before. I wanted to see Jason X. Did not become the movie that I thought it would be. That happens. It's happened with every movie I've ever done. Didn't happen with this one. We wrote it, and it's there. Nobody changed it. Nobody gave us notes. Nobody came in and said, we want this. We want the girl to be more this. We want the hero to be a dog. We didn't get any of that crap. This is the movie we wrote, and this is the and it's never happened before. So while we went in and changed things for locations and for, you know, we had rain one day and so we rewrote things, little stuff like that, it was our changes. So it wasn't that we were forced to do anything we didn't want to do. As long as we work within the budget and are responsible, which, by the way, it's amazing how many people aren't, but we are. We work within the budget, we work within the time, and we're making the movie we want, and that's the reward. And so I couldn't be happier.
Does the story take place in more than one location, or is it just...
It's a road movie. I mean, it takes place. We film it here. It takes place from basically Colorado to Louisiana is the road trip. So we're all over the place. So we go through bits of Texas, bits of Oklahoma.
Why is it a road movie, or considered a road movie?
It's.
I mean, are they running from something or just trying to get somewhere?
They're both running and chasing.
Okay.
So it's. I mean, the quick version is that. A cult has killed Nick's daughter and taken her child, and Nick has basically busted out to go get her, and he's going to get her back, and he meets Amber Heard along the way, and she has some fast wheels, and she helps.
Is it like a satanic cult, or kind of a cult or something?
It's depends on who you ask, but it's definitely a religious cult. And that the one rewrite that we did, it was our own rewrite, and it was to the character Jonah King, played by Billy Burke, played deliciously by Billy Burke, is the cult leader. And he played it. The way we wrote it very snake oil salesman, very he's a con man and he knows he's a con man. That was the first way we wrote it. And we decided that he should be a believer. He should totally believe in his religion. And when we wrote that, suddenly he became scary. Because these guys that really believe, that brings an extra level to it. And we didn't see that when we first wrote it. So I'm thankful. And that's the only rewrite we did. From that point forward, this is what we wrote in March of last year. So we're coming to screen really fast, considering. And it's original. You know. And look, I love remakes. As long as a remake is great, I love it. But this is an original, so we're kind of excited.
Are you yourself a car guy? I heard there's a lot of classic cars.
Not as much as Nick. And Nick is definitely a car guy because Nick and Fichtner and Billy, these guys go on and on about the cars. And so we had no choice but to do our research and get everything right because they were going to nail us if we didn't. And so that's been fun. And just to surround yourself with... You guys should talk to Eric tonight because Eric, the Chargers are all his. And he tells the story about how hard it was to get the Chargers because Dukes of Hazzard wrecked them all. There's hardly any Chargers left. And so, we wrote it as a 1969 GTO. Beautiful car. But we did some 3D tests, and for some weird anomaly kind of reason, the Charger looks beautiful in 3D. That's Ross. Ross feeds us.
Thanks, Ross.
Sorry, Ross, good man.
So the aesthetics of the car goes into play with the 3D.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the Charger and compare it to other cars, the way the lines work, the way the tires, it's just, in 3D, it's gorgeous. And so, one thing we found was, you know, the reflective surface plays weird, does funny things in 3D, so you have to deal with that. I mean, 3D adds a whole level of oh my goodness to the movie in good ways and bad ways that you have to deal with. And we've overcome any obstacle that we ever have because we have a great 3D crew. Max and the guys at Paradise 3D are, because we're shooting in 3D. It's like, and you guys will see tonight, while we're shooting scenes, you can put the glasses on and watch on the monitor. It'll all be there in 3D for you to see. It's not like we're going to do conversion just like everybody else, but we're going to convert back to 2D so the guys with the flat TV screens can see it later.
Do you ever think you'd go back now to doing a movie, shooting it in 2D and converting it to 3D later?
I think it's just as viable a way of telling a story as anything else. But for right now, we kind of enjoy playing around with the new ways to do 3D because I think it's only going to get better. I think eventually we'll come home, we'll sit in our living room, and there'll be a little hologram that'll pop up, and you'll watch these 3D movies, but you'll be able to walk around. I think that's coming, just like, you know, anything else we do. I don't think, you know, it's just going to be 3D. I think 2D is going to be around forever. I think we'll go back and forth.
Was Nick's character, is he always a badass in the movie, or is he just like a normal guy, and then he gets pushed over the edge?
Nick, period, is a badass. Just on his own. I've never seen anybody fire a gun like this. Our props master's, you know, been over and served in the military, and he said the other day, he says, I got 35 kills. I've never seen anybody shoot a gun like Nick Cage. I mean, he's a badass. But yes, the character? Yes, he's always been a badass.
Oh, he was always a badass. Okay.
Yeah, he was pretty much always a badass. He had, he was the kind of guy, you know, some backstory, he was the kind of guy who had gotten mixed up in the wrong crowd, and as a result, wasn't around for his family. And so when his daughter got mixed up with the cult, he wasn't around. And so this is sort of a kind of a story of redemption in some ways, because he screwed up. And so he's going to make things right.
Can you explain like where the mother is? Like, is she dead or?
Yeah, all of that gets some.
Some backstory.
Gets some backstory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you talk about the look of his character because. I heard through the grapevine that Nick was maybe going to go shave his head and put tattoos all over his head, and then.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure.
Has he really said that?
He said to me that originally he pitched DeLuca on shaving his head and doing tattoos.
That's common knowledge, because I was told not to say anything.
Well, I asked him this directly.
Okay, yes, he was going to.
It's common knowledge here, I guess.
Yes.
He was certainly playing with the idea of shaving his head completely and had a huge wraparound delicious tattoo that he was going to get.
So how did you feel about that? Or because he has a cool look. We've all seen the look that he has.
I love his look. I think it's phenomenal, and I think it's perfect for what we wrote, and perfect for the character that we had wanted to see on screen. The only thing, and Patrick and I both agreed, the only reason was a character reason that we didn't want him to do it. We were afraid that if he had done that, he would look so ominous, so badass, that Piper's character would never end up on this road trip together, because she would never believe him. She would never trust him.
He'd be too scary.
He would be too scary. Yeah. He would come across too scary. The way he comes across now, he is just a normal guy going to make things right.
So it's a good thing he didn't just come in one day during pre-production and just say, hey, well, actually, what I did.
Yes, actually.
Ready to go.
The great thing about Patrick is, you know, he started with Craven. He started on the screen, well, he started way before the screen films, but people started recognizing him on the screen films editing. And he's always been the guy that, and we're like this now, it doesn't matter what you throw at us. We are going to improvise, overcome, we'll adapt to the situation, and we're going to get the shot. We're going to make the movie. We're going to make the movie we came here to make. We're not going to bellyache. We're not going to bitch to the studio. We're going to make the movie, whether they like it or not. And most people don't do that. Most people bitch. They want more money. They want more this, more that. We don't do that. We're going to make the movie because this is what we want to do.
Does the movie have like a really ironic, like wink-wink sensibility to it, or is it played more straight?
There are moments. There are moments of fun. But it's never necessarily a wink-wink. It's just interesting and odd, and crazy things happen inside the world, just like crazy things happen inside our world. And so we don't shy away from that stuff. It's just when we take semi-ordinary characters, even though they have their own skill sets, we take those guys and we drop them into extraordinary situations and watch how they get out of them.
Do you have any sort of like one-liners in the movie, or is it...
There are some one-liners. And some of those we wrote, some of those Nick came up with, some of them Bill. So we've never really been the kind that, I love writing, and I'm good at it. But, you know, the script has to change. You know, the actors come in and they make characters their own. And so Patrick and I have never been the kind that our script is the Bible. We want to make sure the story is told. Make sure you stick to the story. But if you have to make changes to get to your character, that's fine. Now, a lot of times there's some funny one-liners and funny things that happen that are out of the ordinary. I like it.
What's the biggest adversity that you guys have encountered so far?
Well, the weather in Shreveport is completely unpredictable. So that's been... is that what you mean? Like,
yeah, like what was the one night where you had to improvise and you never thought you'd do a certain scene a certain way and ended up going down a different road?
We've done several scenes. We've had backup plans, A and B and C backup plans for a lot of different scenes because of weather. We had one entire huge, huge twist in the movie, massive scene that took place outside. And as we approached that, the forecast called for rain. So we changed it and put it in a church. And we did it, and now I like it better. It's not like we were forced to do something we didn't want to do. I mean, when you see that scene, you'll realize that we're really lucky that the weather came at us, because now it has a lot more meaning that wasn't automatically there. There's some sort of undertones that wouldn't have existed had we shot it outside. And so we got lucky in that instance. So what we try to do is take whatever obstacles have come our way and make them work in our favor. We just like any other movie, we've had car troubles. We've had issues with weather, issues with, you name it. Just, every man, you can't predict this stuff. But you, as long as you go at it with the mindset that doesn't matter what happens, we'll figure out a way around it. That's the reason I'm here. The reason I'm here is that Patrick and I are partners, and when crazy stuff comes our way, we'll sit down and brainstorm and think around it, just like we do when we're thinking about a scene. And so, while the masters may not quite understand my being here, or at least they didn't at first, they do now, because we really are a partnership. And I'm in his contract, which is the only reason I'm here. When he's on set, I'm on set.
One of the things you think of in like classic road movies and with classic cars is like classic rock music.
Is that something that plays an element in this?
We played more rock music when we were writing the script than, yeah, because we went back to all, you know, Renegade, you know, old Styx songs, all of the old 70s, 80s music. That's the stuff that was pounding in the background while we were doing this stuff. It's a part of those movies. It's a part of, even though, you know, it's funny, if you go back and you look at those old movies, a lot of times they didn't have the budget for music like that. And, but as far as when we, each scene was written to different time, whether it be Breakfast in America or, you know, just different soundtracks that we would have for different parts of the movie. So I'm interested to see how it all plays once it's all put together.
Do you think that's going to carry over to the soundtrack?
I don't know, actually. That's post, and we can only keep our fingers crossed and hope we can get some.
Would you like it to?
I would love it to, absolutely. I mean, I would love to have the music that, you know, was in our heads when we wrote the thing.
And are there scenes that use a specific song or anything?
There are a couple of scenes. There was one scene where Amber is in the Charger, and she's had a rough day. And she turns on the radio and is singing a song, and we had a bunch of songs in mind, and she suggested a song, and we got the song that she was suggesting, and it's, I don't want to tell you what it is, but it is the most in your song face. Yeah, it's a good song.
When writing, was there ever a point in time where the inspiration or the thought of a graphic novel or inspiration from another graphic novel that kind of came through in the writing?
The graphic novel side?
No,
like,
yeah,
were we inspired by it?
Yeah. Was it ever like, oh, it could go into a graphic novel, or, you know, leaning on to the genre of comic or graphic novel?
I love comics, so yeah. I mean, I yes, I mean, not, I wasn't, I don't think we talked about, we weren't influenced necessarily by graphic novels, but we certainly, once the screenplay was done, we talked about the idea of you could continue, you could tell backstory, you could do things in sort of the graphic novel world, just because we kind of like that word. It's because I've done some stuff with Thomas Jane and Tim Bradstreet in the comic world, and it was interesting to me how close to the screenplay that a comic can be. Certainly a four-issue comic can be a four-act structured screenplay. And so, yeah, I would totally be for that.
You're obviously working on other scripts, other things. Could you talk a little bit about what else you're writing right now or working on?
Well, I think there's not many who don't know that we did a Halloween 3D, and we would still, Patrick and I both, would still very much love to do Halloween 3D. So that's...
Have you written a first draft of that?
We have.
Yeah.
We've written a first draft of that. We have, so it's now in the capable hands of the Weinstein Company.
What about, did you do Clock Tower?
I did, yes. I don't know, I did Clock Tower a dozen years ago. I mean, as you guys know, the business is a weird business, and so there are, when I first started it, my influences were Jonathan Hensley and Dean Laurie and guys who were sort of already established, and they used to tell me, you got to fight for your screenplay. And then there came a time when if you fought for your screenplay, you basically just got fired and replaced. And so Clock Tower was during that time when everyone was scared to fight, and so I didn't fight. And so my draft of Clock Tower sucks, because I wrote exactly what I was told to write, and it's horrible. There have been 7 writers since then. I don't know how good it is or how good it is.
Really?
It was based on Clock Tower 3.
Yeah.
It was based on Scissorman. I don't know if you played
the game. Yeah.
Scissorman's terrifying. The studio at the time didn't want Scissorman because they were afraid he would look silly, to which my response was, well, then why did you buy this? Because that's what the game is. But anyway, I lost that battle.
They never played the game, obviously.
I think they were afraid it would look like Edward Scissorhands, and it wouldn't, because that's not what the game was. But I don't know where it's at now. I'm hopeful that somebody will make it, because it's a scary story. But I hope they go back to the game and do that version. But I haven't heard anything.
We were told earlier that you guys have made this movie in a really short period of time, like from creation to the point in time, which now you've got it filmed. Now, did you guys find that to be like something that lit a fire under your ass, or is that like hindering sometimes?
I think, personally, I think it's better. I think the longer that you sit on a screenplay, the longer that you sit. I'm a firm believer that you can write the magic out of a movie, out of a screenplay. That I'm not saying the first draft is always the best draft, but a lot of times the magic is in the first couple of drafts. That's where the inspiration was. And so the more you rewrite, the more you rewrite, and the more numbnuts who come in and give you notes, then the more problems you run into. And the more it suddenly doesn't seem like the movie that you wrote, it doesn't seem like the story, the characters have changed, the characters have watered down. And we don't have that with this. This is as hard R as we wrote in the beginning. And yeah, it was fast. It was fast mainly because of DeLuca. We came in with DeLuca. Nick, I think, had a deal with Millennium. So we ended up with Millennium quickly, and Millennium said, go make the movie you want to make. Basically, here's the ground rules. Don't break, stay within the budget, stay within the time, and go make your movie. And that's what we've done.
It's awesome that you guys were afforded that opportunity.
Yeah. It really has been a blessing, because, you can go, you can look at our other movies that we've done where in a different studio system, we didn't get to make the movie we wanted to make. We made the movie somebody else wanted us to make. And that can be a little disheartening. It can be a lot disheartening. And so while there have been, there's struggles depending on, it doesn't matter which table you're at, you're going to have obstacles. But I kind of like being able to make the movie you want to make.
Personally. Do you want to talk about Frank at all?
Who's Frank? I play a character in the movie. I play Frank. Frank, a lot of people, I've seen on the internet, it's all about Nick's look and his hair. And this is Nick's movie. This is Frank's movie. Okay? You can ask Nick. He'll tell you himself. This is Frank's movie. I'm a big part of. I'm Luke Skywalker coming home and finding his uncle and aunt destroyed and going on the journey. That's Frank. Frank sets this movie going. So yeah, I play a small part.
You play a tranny with a biker bar. Yeah.
I play a guy named Sid with a gopher.
You tend to get off in pretty gruesome ways in our
films. I do.
This character seems to be similar end.
Do you really want to know that?
Hey guys.
Hey. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike DeLuca.
Hey.
He's the reason we're here. Because he had Nick Cage's cell phone number. So what were you saying? Does Frank get offed? I'd love to keep that as a surprise. I think we talked about it for Halloween 3D. We talked about it for Bloody Valentine. I said the next time it'd be nice if I could live. So I'll let you guys decide how that conversation turned out. But I got to say this was an interesting role because. On the surface, it probably should have been it's probably number 6 on the call sheet, so it's a pretty good size role.
You're in a scene with a naked girl, I'm assuming, because that should just be your every role, I think.
Dude, seriously, yeah. Why would I not? I'm all for the balance and fairness of nudity in movies. So, yes, most likely. Most likely there's some nudity involved.
Do you have any concerns shooting it as such a hard R that when it comes time for the MPAA to look at it, you're going to have to cut something? Do you fear that there's maybe one scene that not make it?
No. No, because and it's less me, it's more Patrick. Patrick has edited all of these movies. He edited Scream, he's worked with Wes all these years, he worked with the Weinsteins all those years. He sort of knows what he can get away with and what he can't. With Valentine, we knew we had some very graphic moments, so we shot a whole lot of the fuck scene, and we sent that to the MPAA, and that's all they could see. They didn't know there was any blood on screen. All they could think about was this 5-minute sex scene. So we cut that down to what it was supposed to be, what we intended from the beginning, and we got our R.
Did you do that again here?
I don't know if we'd have to. I don't think we have to. I think we everything has been smart. Everything's shot really smart. And the hard R is definitely there, but the hard R is there in tone more than anything else. It's these characters have had a long, hard road. This is Mike. He has Nick Cage's cell phone.